Already, Miss Wells, though I'm sorry we can't spare one of the steamer's boats. Frona Wells arose with alacrity and came to the first officer's side. We're so busy, he explained, and gold rushers are such perishable freight, at least. I understand, she interrupted, and I, too, am behaving as though I were perishable, and I am sorry for the trouble I am giving you, but she turned quickly and pointed to the shore. Do you see that big log house, between the clump of pines and the river? I was born there. Guess I'd be in a hurry myself, he muttered sympathetically as he piloted her along the crowded deck. Everybody was in everybody else's way, nor was there one who failed to proclaim it at the top of his lungs. 1,000 gold seekers were clamoring for the immediate landing of their outfits. Each hatchway gaped wide open, and from the lower depths the shrieking donkey engines were hurrying the misassorted outfit skyward. On either side of the steamer, rows of scows received the flying cargo, and on each of these scows a sweating mob of men charged the descending slings and heaved bales and boxes about in frantic search. Men waved shipping receipts and shouted over the steamer rails to them. Sometimes two and three identified the same article, and war arose. The two circle and the circle and dot brands caused endless jangling, while every whipsaw discovered a dozen claimants. The purser insists that he is going mad, the first officer said, as he helped Frona Wells down the gangway to the landing stage, and the freight clerks have turned the cargo over to the passengers and quit work. But we're not so unlucky as the Star of Bethlehem, Harry assured her, pointing to a steamship at anchor a quarter of a mile away. Half of her passengers have pack horses for Skagway and White Pass, and the other half are bound over the Chilkat, so they've mutinied, and everything's at a standstill. Say, you, he cried, beckoning to a Whitehall which hovered discreetly on the outer rim of the floating confusion. A tiny launch, pulling heroically at a huge tow barge, attempted to pass between, but the boatman shot nervily across her bow, and just as he was clear, unfortunately, caught a crab. The slewed the boat around and brought it to a stop. Watch out, the first officer shouted. A pair of 70-foot canoes, loaded with outfits, gold rushers, and Indians, and under full sail, drove down from the counter direction. One of them veered sharply towards the landing stage, but the other pinched the Whitehall against the barge. The boatman had unshipped his oars in time, but his small craft groaned under the pressure and threatened to collapse, whereat he came to his feet and in short, nervous phrases consigned all canoemen and launch captains to eternal perdition. A man on the barge leaned over from above and baptized him with crisp and crackling oaths, while the whites and Indians in the canoe laughed derisively. Oh, one of them shouted. Why don't ye learn to row? The boatman's fist landed on the point of his critic's jaw and dropped him stunned upon the heaped merchandise. Not content with this summary act, he proceeded to follow his fist into the other craft. The miner nearest him tugged vigorously at a revolver which had gemmed in its shiny leather holster, while his brother Argonauts, laughing, waited the outcome. But the canoe was underway again, and the Indian helmsman drove the point of his paddle into the boatman's chest and hurled him backward into the bottom of the Whitehall. When the flood of oaths and blasphemy was at full tide, and violent assault and quick death seemed most imminent, the first officer had stolen a glance at the girl by his side. He had expected to find a shocked and frightened maiden countenance, and was not at all prepared for the flushed and deeply interested face which met his eyes. I am sorry, he began, but she broke in, as though annoyed by the interruption. No, not at all, I am enjoying it every bit. Though I am glad that man's revolver stuck. If it had not, we might have been delayed in getting ashore. The first officer laughed, and therein displayed his tact. That man is a robber, he went on, indicating the boatman, who had now shoved his oars into the water, and was pulling alongside. He agreed to charge only $20 for putting you ashore, said he'd have made it 25 had it been a man. He's a pirate, mark me, and he will surely hang someday. $20 for a half hour's work? Think of it. Easy, sport, easy, cautioned the fellow in question, at the same time making an awkward landing and dropping one of his oars overside. You've no call to be flinging names about, he added, defiantly, wringing out his shirt sleeve, wet from rescue of the air. You've got good ears, my man, began the first officer, and a quick fist, the other snapped in, and a ready tongue. Need it in my business. No getting along without it among you sea sharks. Pirate, am I, and you with 1,000 passengers packed like sardines. Charge em double first-class passage, feed em steerage grub, and bunk em worse than pigs. Pirate, eh? Me? A red-faced man thrust his head over the rail above and began to bellow lustily. I want my stock landed. Come up here, Mr. Thurston, now, right away. 50 cayuses of vertical bar mine eating their heads off in this dirty kennel of yours, and it'll be a sick time you'll have if you don't hustle them ashore as fast as God'll let you. I'm losing $1,000 a day, and I won't stand it. Do you hear? I won't stand it. You've robbed me right and left from the time you cleared dock in Seattle, and by the hinges of hell, I won't stand it anymore. I'll break this company as sure as my name's Thad Ferguson. You hear my spiel? I'm Thad Ferguson, and you can't come and see me any too quick for your health. You hear? Pirate, eh? The boatman soliloquized. Who? Me? Mr. Thurston waved his hand appeasingly at the red-faced man and turned to the girl. I'd like to go ashore with you, and as far as the store, but you see how busy we are. Goodbye, and a lucky trip to you. I'll tell off a couple of men at once and break out your baggage. Have it up at the store tomorrow morning, sharp. She took his hand lightly and stepped aboard. Her weight gave the leaky boat a sudden lurch, and the water hurtled across the bottom boards to her shoe tops, but she took it coolly enough, settling herself in the stern sheets and tucking her feet under her. Hold on, the officer cried. This will never do, Miss Wells. Come on back, and I'll get one of our boats over as soon as I can. I'll see you in heaven first, retorted the boatman, shoving off. Let go, he threatened. Mr. Thurston gripped tight hold of the gunwale, and as reward for his chivalry had his knuckles wrapped sharply by the oar blade. Then he forgot himself, and Miss Wells also, and swore fervently. I dare say our farewell might have been more dignified, she called back to him, her laughter rippling across the water. Jove, he muttered, doffing his cap gallantly. There is a woman, and a sudden hunger seized him, and a yearning to see himself mirrored always in the gray eyes of Frona Wells. He was not analytical, he did not know why, but he knew that with her he could travel to the end of the earth. He felt a distaste for his profession, and a temptation to throw it all over and strike out for the Klondike whither she was going. Then he glanced up the beetling side of the ship, saw the red face of Thad Ferguson, and forgot the dream he had for an instant dreamed. Splash! A handful of water from his strenuous oar struck her full in the face. Hope you don't mind it, miss, he apologized. I'm doing the best I know how, which ain't much. So it seems, she answered, good-naturedly. Not that Isle of the Sea, bitterly, but I've got to turn a few honest dollars somehow, and this seemed the likeliest way. I oughter have been in Klondike by now, if I'd had any luck at all. Tell you how it was. I lost my outfit on Windy Arm, halfway in, after packing it clean across the pass. Zip. Slash. She shook the water from her eyes, squirming the while, as some of it ran down her warm back. You'll do, he encouraged her. You're the right stuff for this country. Going all the way in? She nodded cheerfully. Then you'll do. But as I was saying, after I lost my outfit I hit back for the coast, bine broke, to hustle up another one. That's why I'm charging high pressure rates. And I hope you don't feel sore at what I made you pay. I'm no worse than the rest, miss, sure. I had to dig up 100 for the sole dub, which ain't worth 10 down in the States. Same kind of prices everywhere. Over on the Skagway Trail horseshoe nails is just as good as a quarter any day. A man goes up to the bar and calls for a whiskey. Whiskey's half a dollar. Well, he drinks his whiskey, plunks down 2 horseshoe nails, and it's okay. No kickoman on horseshoe nails. They use them to make change. You must be a brave man to venture into the country again after such an experience. Won't you tell me your name? We may meet on the inside. Who? Me? Oh, I'm Del Bishop, pocket miner, and if ever we run across each other, remember I'd give you the last shirt. I mean, remember my last bit of grub is yours. Thank you, she answered with a sweet smile, for she was a woman who loved the things which rose straight from the heart. He stopped rowing long enough to fish about in the water around his feet for an old corned beef can. You'd better do some bailing, he ordered, tossing her the can.